This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the top of the hour, Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We're at the Beacon Building right in downtown Manchester at 814 Elm Street. Come on down, have some lunch at Midtown Cafe, and you can come and watch the show. We are now in studio with John Clayton, the director of the Manchester Historical Association. And you've now been at your position for three months. How is it going?
Oh, it's going fabulously. I wish I could tell you all the things I've done, but we'd carry over into Kale & Company, and I don't want to butt into Ken's show.
Wait a minute. Why don't you stay for Ken's show today?
what a concept. Yes. I can be in two places at the same time.
You are. That just is, I think, the most perfect position for you. I mean, really.
My cheeks hurt from smiling, Carol. Telling you, it's just ridiculous. You know, the relationships I've been able to reestablish, you know, my personal friendships with a lot of the people who represent the institutions in the city. Every door has been open to me, and people keep making the mistake of saying, if there's anything I can do, don't even run that by me. I was with Neil Levesque at the New Hampshire Institute for Politics yesterday afternoon because we are going to do an exhibition around the presidential primary. And our focus is going to be very Manchester-centric. You know, you can talk about the New Hampshire primary. Concord is not the crucible of the primary. Nashville's not. Portsmouth's not. Manchester is the focal point for all the activity that happens. So what we're doing is we're making a public plea for people who have material of themselves with the presidential candidates down through the years to let us borrow your photos. We'll screen them. We'll blow them up, and we'll have an exhibition, which is really interactive with Manchester people, and not just the primary candidates, but also the presidents. Every president since Andrew Jackson has come to Manchester, and we have images of all of those. So I want to leave the definition broad enough so that we can use those old photos from our files showing presidents in Manchester, but also have some fun with the candidates. My friend Bob LaPree was a photographer, a stringer for the New York Times before he joined me at the Union Leader. He has thousands of photographs of candidates going through Manchester, and I grabbed a half a dozen. I did a show on Manchester Public TV last week, scanned them, and they posted them on the air while we were on TV, and I asked Bob Backus and Mike Farley if they could identify not just the candidate, but the Manchester person standing next to them or with them, kind of as a chaperone or an escort, and it was hilarious. So we're going to have a wall in the exhibition with no legend, no names. Identify the candidates. We'll have a clipboard there, and you go through. Identify the candidate, but identify the Manchester person who's with them. And at the end, again, we will have a legend. You can lift the lid up, and you can see who's who. But that's a way to make a photo exhibition far more interactive, and it's not that passive experience of just letting the photos pass by your eyes, but get engaged with them and try to figure out who's who. So that's my whole focus, is making it more engaging as opposed to the passive museum experience. Get people involved in it.
Well, all you have to do is walk in the Red Arrow Diner, and all the pictures are on the wall.
It's true. It's true. Well, we're also doing a Manchester Wall of Fame, which is another whole thing involving 48 people from Manchester's past and present who we think people should know about. We have a huge educational component to our mission. And so we've already asked people, who would you put on the Wall of Fame? And
we're getting
inundated with responses. Some are very self-serving. Yes, my name has come up several times, and no, I will not be on the wall. I'll stand next to it, and you can interact with me that way while I stand there. But that's another thing. I could probably walk into the Red Arrow and look at the names on the counter and come up with a pretty
counter,
much of a Manchester who's who.
Sir. Oh, my God.
All right, so if somebody said, John, we really think you belong up there, but you have to quit your job.
No chance. I'm not going up there anyway.
Yeah.
As I said, I will be the personification of the board. I will be head number 49. I'll stand next to it, and if you push a button, I'll talk to
48A.
You.
48A.
So, yeah, it's been a whirlwind 3 months, and it's just everybody keeps telling me how happy they are for me. But
you're in your element.
But what's strange is they say they're happy for Manchester because I'm back working in town. And I find
it's
that
true.
Humbling in ways that are very difficult to express. But you can tell the sincerity. I was sitting with former Mayor Ray Wozorek at the back room, you know, in the little bar or lounge area.
And having a mudslide and chicken fingers.
And everybody kept coming up and saying congratulations to me. And Ray said all night long, it's a perfect fit. I'm telling you, it's a perfect fit. He was so excited. So we're going to set up a regular time, have our own show in the lounge at the back room. So thank you for asking. And I can't believe it's been 3 months. It feels like it's been 3 days.
That's awesome.
Well, the good thing is that because you are such a great guest, you are invited to many media opportunities, which gives you a chance to spread the word. I mean, that's, you know, part of the reason you're there.
It has been remarkable. And clearly, you know, having spent 25 years at the Union Leader, always, you know, working with my friends on radio and television, hosting New Hampshire Crossroads. Yeah, I do have a really good network of friends in the media. And the key, as we say, is when you go on, you have to give good guests.
That's so
and
true.
And I try to give good guests. Your colleague, Tracy, had me on another station, which I won't name, on Monday, the same day Katie McQuaid wrote about our Wall of Fame and the Union Leader. So, yeah, it's multimedia exposure. That's and cool. That is... It's enormous, and people are telling me, I'd never heard of this place before, and now I don't hear anything else. So I need to be sure I don't wear out my welcome and overstay.
Well, that is to be considered.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is.
So the key
we're all set, John. You can go.
Your time is up. Yeah. 15 minutes are over. Right?
Yeah.
So it's been good, and that helps a lot in terms of, you know, calling attention to the place. But the key is, once we get them there, we need to give them a reason to come back. And that's why these rotating exhibitions, I call them pop-ups, are so important because, you know, the permanent collection is there and it's fascinating. But, you know, how many times can you walk by this, you know, and nothing has changed? So these pop-ups using our gallery space, getting people from Manchester's photographs into the museum, it's living history. And I like it. I like that term and I'd like to embody that. So hopefully these kinds of exhibitions will give people a reason to come back to the Mill Yard Museum.
How do you bring people in that are just visiting New Hampshire or Manchester on their way to someplace else looking for something to do? Is there enough that they would be interested in it?
I think there is. We have the Granite State Ambassadors are at the airport.
Sure.
And so when you land and if you're from out of town, they're there to tell you
what
great. Kind of activities
they, really are.
They are. And I'm trying to get them involved with the museum to have them present. And I'm still working on that. But if you go on Yelp, you know, they're TripAdvisor, they have people who review. They go to a museum and they write their own review. We get phenomenal, responses, like 4.8 out of 5 stars. And everyone says, I didn't know about this before. It's an undiscovered gem. My job is to make sure it doesn't go undiscovered any longer. We got to get the word out there that we're here. And hopefully by beating the drum in the way that I am, people from Manchester will recommend to their friends when they come in, you've got to go to the Mill Yard Museum. We have not had great luck with the Manchester schools in the last couple of years. Fourth grade is when they study New Hampshire history. And this past year, I'm sad to say we had one school, the McDonough School, had their fourth graders come through. It's a budget issue, as it always is. In that case, we had a grant from the Kiwanis Club to let the fourth graders from McDonough come. Every kid wrote us a letter to thank us for it. And I had a meeting with the superintendent of schools on Thursday, and I brought her 10 of the letters to show how the kids appreciate the educational experience of coming to the museum. It's not like going to Canopy Lake Park. It's a real learning experience. And she was really touched by that. And so she and I have vowed that we're going to work together. Mayor Gatsas has pledged the same thing. Since the Sea Science Center welcomes every fourth grader throughout the year at no charge, I called the mayor's bluff and said, same deal, no charge. I'll waive the fee for any fourth graders who want to come with their classes. So we'll make it happen.
What is the budget that they need to send a fourth grade class?
It's not that much, but buses are the key. The school buses, the fuel, the drivers, most of the drivers who drive school buses are idle between 9 and 2. They don't work in that interim period, but it still costs money to start the buses. I'm talking to Diane Raymond and Brian Tremblay at the Boys and Girls Club. They have a fleet of 5 buses, which, again, sit idle from 9 to 2. So we're trying to figure out how we can pay for fuel, how we can pay for drivers, and use those buses to bring the Manchester fourth graders to the Mill Yard Museum. So when I say partnerships, I mean I'm taking on anybody who makes the mistake of saying, if I can do anything to help. Well, so we're really doing that. So that's a big project.
That is such a no-brainer for our fourth grade students in Manchester to not go is a travesty.
In May, we had a week where an entire week, all 5 days, the kids from the Wyndham fourth grade schools were at the Mill Yard Museum. So if Wyndham can afford to send kids to Manchester, they obviously recognize the educational benefit to doing so. We think we can try to help make it happen in Manchester.
Well, I would like to help. The Red Arrow, for sure. I mean, I see that kind of stuff.
You heard that out there, right?
I am serious, too. I mean, that just is, the kids, that's just so important.
Yeah, it
really is.
It was a transformative experience
for me.
And to instill
that in them then, you know, I mean,
And think about the immigrant kids who are coming to school in Manchester.
Right.
They have no sense of this city's history. And we are a city of immigrants. And
yeah.
I tell them constantly when I speak before the groups that, you know, your legacy will be proved out by what's happened in the centuries past. You know, first it was the Irish who came in, and then it was the French Canadian, then the Germans and the Belgians and so on. And eventually they assimilate into the community. And that's what will happen with the new wave of immigrants. So working with a photographer named Becky Field, who has an incredible access to the immigrant community over the last 5 years, her photos are beautiful and intimate and telling. And I called her the other day and said, how about we do exhibit where we juxtapose your present-day images with our historic images of immigrants coming into Manchester? So she's totally gung-ho, as am I. So I'm thinking in February, after the presidential primary exhibition's over, that would be the one that will bring the immigrant community into the museum to see these photographs. And that's my window to make them understand the legacy of immigrants in Manchester. So, yeah, other than that, I had lunch yesterday. It was the first time I stopped working in 3 months.
Is that right? And what did you have for lunch?
It's nonstop.
It's a food show.
I had a sandwich in my car.
Oh!
I'm sure everybody thinks I'm having these posh lunches, you know, at the Courier with Susan Strickler. But no, it's really it's a job that you don't even realize. You look up and it's 3:30. Did I eat lunch today? No, I kind of slipped my mind. So.
Isn't that? That's your dream job.
So have you lost weight as a result of...
Let's talk about food. I'm getting hungry now that you brought it up.
Well, that's true. Now, is there a food presence, or might there be, at the Manchester Historic Association?
There might be. And the 48 faces that will grace that wall of fame, I think there might be a hamburger baron of note that a lot of people in Manchester have forgotten about, you know, in the mists of time. If you've ever eaten at a McDonald's restaurant, you have eaten at a restaurant with deep, deep ties to the city of Manchester.
Well, tell us the story.
Oh, sure. You want to know the rest of the story?
It's a great story.
I'll still fritz the line. I'll tell you the rest of the story later. Richard and Morris McDonald were two Manchester boys, graduates of my alma mater, Manchester High School West, who, when they graduated from West, was in the height of the Depression, and they was the early stages in the late 20s. So rather than stay here and try to find jobs in the mills, they went out to California. They had an uncle who worked in the movie business, and he helped them get started out in California. They didn't like the movie business much. They knew they weren't going to be actors or stars. They did get to meet Douglas Fairbanks Sr. and Mary Pickford, so they made friends. They were genial guys. But they decided they wanted to go into the restaurant business. So what did they open? They opened a hot dog stand. Not a hamburger stand, a hot dog stand. But they were really smart. They opened it outside the Santa Anita Raceway, which was a famous horse racetrack out in California. And the catch was it was in the orange groves, so they sold hot dogs and orange juice. And even if you had a bad day at the track, you could afford a hot dog and a 5-cent glass of orange juice. So they made a lot of money. They wound up starting a bigger restaurant in San Bernardino, California. Now, San Bernardino is famous for three things. It's the home of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It's the home of the first McDonald's restaurant. And it's the home of the Hell's Angels.
What a combination.
And I know you're thinking, how is he going to try these things together? Well, I will. It's a long story. So they opened this really big restaurant, and it was a barbecue joint. And, you know, they had the coal and the wrought iron grates and everything. And it was doing a really good business. And then, you know, at the end of the war, their business got bigger and bigger because the GIs came home. We had the baby boom. The baby boom also coincided with the growth of the California highway system. Cars were back in vogue because not only had the war ended, there was fuel for the cars, there was steel to make the cars, rubber for tires. All these things conspired to benefit the McDonald brothers' big sprawling restaurant with the parking lot and the pretty girls on roller skates and the short skirts roller skating out to bring the food to the car. Why eat in the car? You ever eat in a restaurant with a four-year-old? Did you ever finish a meal in a restaurant with a four-year-old? Of course not. So these young families would choose to eat in their cars so their kids weren't disruptive, and, you know, everything was really successful. But when you have a vast parking lot full of cars and pretty girls in short skirts roller skating around, they tend to draw a certain crowd themselves, young men. And in San Bernardino, California, the young men were on motorcycles and leather jackets.
Thus the Hell's Angels.
And they started scaring off this very carefully cultivated clientele the McDonald brothers had brought to their barbecue restaurant. And they were really on the horns of a dilemma. So finally, what they did is they closed the doors to the restaurant for 6 months. And at the end of that six-month period, when they opened the restaurant, they didn't have any doors. They had windows. They invented in that time period what we know today as the fast food restaurant. The premise is as simple as it can get. Instead of bringing the food to the customers came to the food. Instead of worrying about breaking dishes and losing silverware and dropping glasses, everything was paper. They just had food that was edible without utensils. And so people would stand in line and wait for untold lengths of time to get a McDonald's hamburger. In the beginning, they had hamburgers, French fries, soda, and shakes. That was it.
No was it called McDonald's at the time?
It was called McDonald's, yeah.
As the other drive-in place, was it also McDonald's?
It was called McDonald's as well, but the concept of fast food was what separated McDonald's from McDonald's. Same brothers, same name.
Okay.
But all of a sudden, they have this new premise of the fast food.
What year are we talking now when they do the windows?
We're talking 1948, 1950. It took about 5 years for the Hells Angels to weave their magic to drive the crowd away. So without the pretty girls hanging around, the McDonald brothers didn't have to worry about those crowds. The people would come get their food and go back and eat it in the car. They weren't worried about, you know, all the other dining amenities. They didn't have a dining room. They didn't have, you know, they didn't have to worry about tables because people were eating in their cars. So all the heavy equipment they had, they got rid of, and they just went with really ingenious, cutting-edge technology. They had a friend who was a sheet metal guy. So they had the stainless steel grills. Unlike the old charcoal grill where you put a piece of meat on and, the grill goes cold, mm-hmm. you have to wait for it to get back up to temp. These stainless steel things were incredibly even temperature at all times. They were the first to use the infrared lights to keep the food warm that was already prepared. They had a sheet metal guy who made them the gun that puts just the right amount of ketchup and mustard on every burger.
What about the shake machines?
The shake machines
wasn't
were
there?
The key. That was
wasn't that like
that
yeah.
was the breakthrough.
Right.
The McDonald's were making so many shakes. They had what was called a mix master, and it had five spindles, mm-hmm. and you could make five shakes at a time. Well, the guy who sold those machines to them could not understand how one restaurant could need five shake machines that made five shakes at a time. And if I do my math, that's 25, right? Help me out.
They had five machines?
Five machines.
25, right?
25.
Yeah.
See, they told me there'd be no math today. So they had these machines, and what they did is rather than using the stainless steel thing that you see if you go to a Blake's restaurant now to make a frap, they just cut the spindles in half so they could make the shake right in the paper cup. You didn't have to worry about the spindle drilling through the bottom of the cup. Mm-hmm. So it was incredibly fast. And the guy who sold those machines was a gentleman named Ray Kroc. And so he came out from Detroit, Michigan. Mike, you know a little bit about Michigan.
Yes.
And said, I need to see what's going on here. And when he got there, the line was around the block waiting to get hamburgers in a bag from this restaurant. And he could not believe what he was looking at. So he went to the McDonald brothers and said, I really believe in this concept. Can I become a franchise salesperson for you? Will you let me do that? And they figured, hey, why not? And so that's how Ray Kroc insinuated himself into the McDonald's story. And when I see a crossword puzzle and it says founder of McDonald's and it's got four letters, I get out my pen and I start writing a letter to the editor to straighten him out because it was Richard and Morris McDonald who invented the concept of McDonald's. Dick McDonald even designed the golden arches. And when he sat down with the engineer and said, this is what I want, the engineer said, I'll do it on one condition. Dick said, what? He said, don't tell anybody I had anything to do with it. He thought it was hideous. The engineer did. And you know what? The McDonald's Golden Arches is now the best recognized logo in the world. It passed Coca-Cola's round logo recently.
Does he still want to not be identified with it well, in his grave?
If Mr. McDonald finds his way onto this wall, and God knows Dick was a very dear friend of mine before he passed away, he has this great picture of him peeking out from beneath the Golden Arches. Yeah, true story.
All right, so when did Ray Kroc actually become the indeed owner of McDonald's?
Well, it took about 3 years for him to get it under their skin to the point where they couldn't stand him anymore. Ray Kroc was a really driven, pushy salesman.
Yes.
And the McDonald brothers were New Hampshire guys. They were kind of laid back. Their idea of success was if they could buy a new Cadillac at the end of the year. And they were doing very well. So they had about five, maybe eight restaurants open as far out as Phoenix. And eventually they said, this is enough. We don't want to be spending our nights with accountants. And so Ray Kroc made a proposition he would buy them out. So the brothers said, give us the weekend. We'll come back. Morris McDonald, whose nickname was Mac, by the way.
Yeah.
I wonder if that'll catch on. Mac said, he's the older brother, so he's speaking for the family. He says $1 million. And Ray Kroc said, outstanding. I can get that money. I have backers in Detroit. $1 million it is. Deal. But then Richard McDonald, the younger brother, says, whoa, wait a minute. I also won $1 million.
Oh.
So now it's $2 million. And Kroc does the math in his head faster than I and says, okay, $2 million, I can do that. But remember, these guys are from New Hampshire. So I said, well, hang on, Ray. We don't want to pay taxes on the money because we're from New Hampshire and we don't like paying taxes. So we'd like you to pay the taxes on the $2 million, which is about $750,000 more. And Ray Kroc is thinking, that may overextend me. Hey, your name is on it. We're going to keep your name on it. You like the concept. It's yours. Why don't you just take a small percentage of the company rather than all that upfront money? And they were from New Hampshire. So they said, Ray, we really don't like you very much. And we don't want to be in business with you. So if you want to buy us out, all well and good. If you don't, we'll part as friends, or what we'll call friendship. So he came back and he wound up raising the money. He bought them out. And from that day forward, he did everything in his power to expunge the McDonald brothers from the corporate record of McDonald's. If you read the official, you know, McDonald's biography, it's not there. The book I recommend is called The 50s, by an author named David Halberstam, who is a Dartmouth College graduate, a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, a remarkable writer who just passed away a few years ago. The book of the 50s tells the real story of McDonald's and how these two brothers from Manchester, New Hampshire, you know, left Manchester because their father got laid off from his job at a shoe shop after 40 years. No gold watch, no retirement plan. They wanted to work for themselves. And so the restaurant business was the venue they chose. And how'd they do? The single largest restaurant chain in the world still carries their name. And all the basic elements that they put in place are still there. So Ray Kroc, you can't buy a Kroc burger, can you?
No.
You can buy a Big Mac.
So here's a story I heard about Ray Kroc early on. So he ponies up the $2 million or whatever it is, which I'm sure it taps him out pretty much.
Oh, it did.
He hires a secretary, and because he can't really afford to pay her, he gives her 10% of the company. So in the 70s, she's worth $64 million. Yeah.
Well, the good thing about it is that after Ray Kroc passed away, Dick McDonald was ultimately embraced as a senior spokesman for the company. He went down to New York. He flipped the 5 billionth hamburger in a big ceremony. He had it in a hermetically sealed container on his desk in the shape of a gold burger until one day when his grandson came upstairs and said, Grampy, I don't think that burger is any good on your desk. And he was about 5 years old, and he pried it open and tried to eat the burger. It was a quarter pounder, by the way.
He tried to eat it?
Yes.
Unlike a Twinkie, which, of course, would be as good as the day it was made. Yeah, exactly. So what would the McDonald brothers think if they could be brought back today to see $8 lobster rolls and Happy Meals and everything? I wonder what they would think of what it's become.
Dick actually loved it, and I did a piece with him for New Hampshire Crossroads.
How long ago did he pass?
He passed about 8 years ago now.
Okay.
And he had a scholarship at West High School that was given every year until his death, was great. He remembered where he came from.
Mm-hmm.
But we went to the McDonald's on 2nd Street, which has the child's playground. It used to have a big child's playground. And my producer drove me crazy. Here I have this incredibly dignified 89-year-old gentleman who's agreed to come out and meet us at a McDonald's to do a TV bit. And he asked him if he'd go down the slide.
Oh, my God.
And he did. He was a handsome, patrician-looking man. He looked like Sir John Gielgud. He really did.
Wow.
And he shows up at the McDonald's with that. But if you asked him, he would tell you he'd prefer a hot dog to a hamburger.
Yep.
But he was very good friends with the folks who owned the McDonald's franchises in Manchester. He would often show up at events just as a surprise guest. And, it was a way to perpetuate the story and the connection to Manchester. Because over time, because of the Kroc campaign, they'd kind of been forgotten. Dick moved back to Manchester in 1964, which is when the first McDonald's opened on South Willow Street in Manchester. He was there, and among the dignitaries were five or six of the guys who played in a band with him in high school. He bought them all brand new Cadillacs, just as a I'm back in town kind of thing. So he was a special guy. He really was. And again, dear friend, and sorry he wouldn't be here to tell the story himself, because there were always little shortcuts and breakouts and other, by the ways, and he was a raconteur as well. It was a good story.
So will the McDonald brothers on the Wall of Fame get one or two faces? That's the question.
Well, that's what we have for resources. Photos of Mac are hard to come by.
Are they?
They really are, yeah. I mean, there are some old ones of the two of them together that may have been published like in Restaurant Magazine and some of those things. But as far as the two of them sitting for a studio portrait, no luck. And Dick's stepson lives in Wilbraham, Mass., and I get in touch with him occasionally.
Friendly, sadly enough.
Oh, yeah. so he's a good contact I can reach occasionally. But, the guy married his high school sweetheart. He came back to Bedford. He tells me the biggest thrill of his life was not the McDonald's or the Kroc fleecing. When World War I ended, he lived right next to the fire station on South Main Street. The firemen let him get up on the truck and ring the bell to celebrate the end of the armistice, if you will.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we should take a break, right?
We need
spend a few minutes.
I'm not tired.
Yeah, I know. We might be able to squeeze another 5 minutes out of him.
I think so.
For our next guest.
I hope so.
Right? Yeah. You got to stick around anyway. You're on with Kenny Kale today, right?
I got it.
You're so good.
You can probably sit with Julie.
Patronize the Midtown Cafe.
You're listening to Food for Thought. We're in studio with John Clayton, director of Manchester Historical Association. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are in studio with John Clayton, director of Manchester Historical Association, and we just heard a great... You're such a great storyteller.
That's why he gets asked to speak in so many different venues. And
I did Rotary yesterday, Manchester.
Did you really?
I did, as a matter of fact.
See, for a couple years, they 3 years in a row, they asked me to emcee the kickoff for the Santa Fund for the union leader. Now, you aren't with the paper any longer, and I'm thinking, you know... I should not be up here. John Clayton is really the guy, but I understand, you know, and I was appreciative and I felt honored to be asked. But I always thought of you and thinking, you know, what a great speaker you are. And yeah, I can hold my own, but I don't have the history sense that you do.
Well, the last time I did it, in fact, Mitt Romney was running for president and he was there. So that was just probably I was the last one until you came on.
Right.
And I did it. And it was an interesting time because, you know, Governor Romney was about to announce that he was running for president. But I scooped him with my announcement that my daughter was pregnant with my first grandchild. And he laughed and he made like a $5,000 donation.
But you know, you have to capitalize on those situations. My claim to fame with this whole thing was bringing a box of Twinkies to auction off on the day that they officially went out of business.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that.
Ted Gatzis and I got up and raised $1,500 with a box of Twinkies. So, I mean, and so, oh, yeah, we got to have you back if you can break this kind of money every year. Well, guess what? It ain't going to happen next year.
No.
You know, nobody's going out of business on the day that the union leader's Santa Fund.
But I actually wrote a column some years ago in which I acknowledged the fact that, you know, I don't have money, so I give of my time. It's a form of social tithing. So I volunteer to MC or I'm asked to MC all those. And in fact, as I started, I cited you, Ed Bruder, Stan Spiro, Charlie Sherman, and I are the ones who get asked all the time. And people need to realize that we enjoy it. I mean, it's an honor to be asked.
It truly is.
It is work, but it's still an honor to be asked. And again, it's a way that we can give back.
Yeah, I love exactly right now. And I'm done with here. I'm walking over to the Palace Theater and I'm going to record an announcement that's going to play before all the shows now about turning off your cell phones and you become a member of the Palace. And I'm honored that they asked me to be the voice of that. So,
absolutely.
So it's those kinds of things that keep you really connected to the community.
It gets scary. I mean, I did television. I did Crossroads for 7 years, and I did Chronicle the first year it was on. You know, but I'm a writer, and that's my stock in trade. And I was at Hannaford's or something, and I was speaking to someone, and the woman tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Are you John Clayton?" And I said, "Unless he owes you money, I am." And she said, "I recognized your voice." And I thought, wow, you recognize my voice?
Yeah.
Maybe I am being overexposed. I should probably need to worry about that again.
No. I mean, you just laid out a great story of the history of the McDonald brothers in Manchester that, you know, I don't know anybody else that could tell it the way that you did. It was
really,
I didn't expect all that flash to it.
Oh, no, there's subtleties and nuance. And I always told people, you know, when I was writing a column, it's like, well, what's the difference? A story, a column? A story has layers. A column has layers. It has nuance. It has subtleties. A story's pretty straightforward. And that's why if someone would come and say, can you write a column about this? I had to be my own arbiter and my own judge to say, does that rise to the level of a column, or can I make it rise to a level? And that's the difference, is the layers in the McDonald's story is so fascinating because of the players who were involved, you know, the dollars that were involved, the Hell's Angels were involved. I mean, you get the Hell's Angels, I'm pretty much in. I can make a story about it. And that's that was always the distinction between a story and a column. And I never wanted the column to be reduced to just a straight thing that could have been covered as a news story. So I wanted those subtleties. The Grace Metallia story, the author from Manchester wrote Peyton Place, is laden with subtleties and nuance. And those are the things that made my job better when I was a columnist, because I would seek out those stories that I could have fun with. And, you know, if I could puncture the balloon of pomposity a little bit, that was always
true. Well, to some degree, you are still doing that. People may not be aware of Manchester Inc. Link Com, which is owned and run by Carol Robidoux, a former compatriot of yours at the Union Leader, so people can still find your writing. I'm not sure how frequently you...
I'm doing one a week.
One a week.
All right.
So
yeah.
You're back to that again.
Carol has been a phenomenal supporter of my work, and with the technology now, with Facebook, with the sharing and the social media stuff, I did a piece a couple of weeks ago about the old Amiskeg Ledge, which was a legendary swimming hole for the Amiskeg Brownies, and we had over 8,000 hits on that piece. And tons of shares and tons of likes, so I'm able to express myself in the same way I did at the paper.
It's more exposure than the paper would be. Let's be honest, in today's electronic world.
It's remarkable. And so I share it on our Mill Yard Museum Facebook page, and I share it on my page. There are some great sites out there, things I remember growing up in Manchester.
Love that.
Yeah, well, Carol and I communicate more often via that than we do by a phone. And those are great. And these are people who have a vested interest in Manchester stories because they like to talk about when they grew up here, what it was like. Manchester Happenings Now is another Carol Robidoux Facebook page that has a great following. So, I just filed one today. I mentioned I was at the Institute of Politics. A lot of people don't realize that in a previous incarnation, that was actually a U.S. Army Reserve Center. And it was named after two brothers from Manchester who were killed in World War II. And I think when all these presidential candidates are going through there, they should know a little bit about what that building was before it was the Institute of Politics. And what I love about it is the sisters of the two men who were killed, Mado and Donald Crafts was their last name, C-R-A-F-T-S, they said that building represents everything they stood for. They're teaching about democracy. They're teaching about justice. And my brothers, were they here, would have loved the fact that their name and their building is associated with that mission. It was so central to what they served for. And so that's the story that Carol will be sharing. And I have photograph of the two brothers. The Union Leader published a tabloid at the end of the war in which they published the name of every serviceman or woman from New Hampshire who was killed during World War II. And in the case of brothers, they published photos. And so I have photos of both Mado and Donald Crafts. So Carol will have that tomorrow.
Yeah, so it's ManchesterInkLink.com.
And Facebook.
Facebook as well. Now, her news service, electronic news service, is about a year old, and I'm also a part of it with podcasts. But I was one of the reasons it attracted me is that the page views are phenomenal for a brand new, service.
She sells advertising. She's looking to make a living.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And having worked with her at the Union Leader for years, she's a great reporter.
Yeah.
And she packages this stuff. And, she makes my stuff look like it was done by a design studio.
Yeah, she really knew nothing about, web creation. And I think she's still learning and she's getting some help. But it's pretty darn good looking news service right now.
Yeah. And I read the story about a drug bust in Manchester yesterday and it's in the paper today. So she's also immediate because it's electronic. She doesn't have to wait for the presses to fire up. Right. And she gets the jump on the Union Leader often.
So we should take a quick break here, right?
I know.
I realize time is Julie just walked in.
We need to extend our show.
We do.
I agree.
Julie Barron is standing by from Make-A-Wish, New Hampshire. And we'll get some information from her briefly. That's that. John Clayton, thank you so much. And you did so well. Ken Kale has asked you to
stick around.
Stick around if you don't mind.
Well, now that Julie's here, you can turn the cameras on in the studio. You didn't want to be looking at me. Julie, you got to turn the cameras on for the simulcast.
It's the pulse. We'll have John back again sometime to talk about Manchester food history. 107.7 WTPL.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7. The Pulse.
Food for Thought brought to you by Red Arrow Diners, Manchester, Milford, and now the drive-thru in Londonderry and Fallon's Furniture, the official decorator of the Green Room for Food for Thought. And Kale and Company, Ken Kale with his guest, John Clayton, will be along in just a few moments.
Yeah, Kale will be in the house today.
Cool.
So let's welcome on Julie Barron, President and CEO of Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. You can check them out on the web at nh.wish.org. And what may be happening upstairs?
Good afternoon. Well, today we are working on a man cave for a little boy named Isaac.
I love it.
So those are so popular now.
They are.
So cool.
Wouldn't it be a kid cave, though?
One this summer. Yeah.
Because
he's got two brothers, I guess. That hence the man cave theme.
There you go.
But, yeah.
So what may be going in his man cave? Like, do we know yet, or?
Well,
is this like going to be? Is it like
from
detached
TVs
from
to
the house?
Electronics, yes. And he loves video games and Wii, so there will be all the electronics. Big baseball fan, so there'll be a lot of themed things. you know, with baseball and, yeah, so all kinds of really cool things.
They're cool.
Upstairs as we speak, kind of ordering all the stuff. We've got, well, we've got half of the place working on Isaac's Wish today, and the other half of the place working on our big rafting event that's coming up next week.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so we've got everything from, you know, big blow-up movie screens that are going to be there next week, and, you know, we were talking to, you know, Watermark Marine and Airy Marine and Miles Marine are all kind of coming together, and they're helping us with getting all these rafts out there, securing them out there. We're even going to have a makeshift dock right in Hesky Park this year, so that it'll be easier for people to get from shore to the rafts with big boats and rope pulleys to pull people back and forth. So it's going to be really exciting. That should help on the big overnight, because you guys know it's 44 hours straight. And we've got about 10 teams, and the teams will have people out on the rafts for all of those 44 hours. So team members will be kind of coming and going on
the rafts. Okay.
Last year, you know, in all the excitement, we, you know, nobody was hurt, but a couple of people got wet. So we're trying to get a little bit better at getting people back and forth. So we're working on that today.
So for listeners that are just tuning in that don't know a whole lot about what is going on, let's give a little bit more details of where and when and times and such.
Right. So the event is actually the 5th, 6th, and 7th in Hesky Park, which is right in Meredith Bay. And we are literally going to have people out on the rafts for 44 hours to raise money for Make-A-Wish. You know, because our kids go through so much, you know, that it's kind of neat to be out there and, you know, do a little sacrificing for 44 hours and see if you can do it out on Meredith Bay. So they'll actually be spending the night in the rafts and everything. So
we should try to get somebody on air with us a time or two, at least during that 44-hour period.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, because
well,
I've done that at other stations, yeah. And I think it would be great just to kind of keep the, you know, in everybody's mind.
Well,
that'd be
days great. Are that? 5th, 6th,
Wednesday, Thursday,
it's Wednesday,
Friday.
Thursday,
oh, it
Friday.
Is. Okay,
yep.
So
yeah.
We definitely could.
We definitely can do that.
That would be really neat.
So
we
connect
can
with us. Yeah, yeah, just we'll pre-plan it so we don't, you know, okay, step on any other guests, but would love to do a couple 5-minute shouts, tell people how they can become involved.
Yeah, because there'll be all kinds of things going on, games and stuff on the rafts for those that are, you know, part of a team, and there'll be all kinds of stuff going on shore as well. You know, so people can just drop by, join in the excitement. And
well, this is really turned into a much bigger, I would call it more of an event now. It's not only a fundraiser, but it's bringing people in because it's a fun thing. I mean, you've really dressed it up. I remember the first one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on the Merrimack River off of Arms Park, and now look at it.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. I mean, you know, last year I think we filled the town of Meredith and people were running all over the place. And so, you know, this year each year we add more things to do, both on land and on the rafts, and to get people all pumped
How
up.
How big
excited.
Are the rafts? I mean, are they big?
Oh,
I mean,
huge.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got one mammoth one. I mean, it's huge. And then all these other little rafts.
Little satellite rafts.
Satellite rafts. Yeah. So that, you know, if you did want to, you know, go in and take a nap, you could. Or if you want to hang out on the big raft with everyone. So if people want to go to our website, rather, at nh.wish.org, they can see some pictures of it. We've got some aerials on there.
Okay.
And it's really, really cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to do that so I can get a visual.
Yeah.
Got it.
All right, so it started out with just a couple guys doing it. Now there are teams. So can you guess how many people will totally be involved during this 44-hour period?
Yeah, so we have over 10 teams.
Okay.
And each team has anywhere from, you know, 15 to 25 people on it. And all of them are raising money through sponsorships for their team. So there's going to be lots of prizes for, you know, the team that raises the most money and some huge, huge bragging rights. So last year, the state police won, and right now they're in the lead again. So I can give, you know, maybe I can get you a list of all of the teams that are going to be out there. So if anyone wants to sponsor a team, that would be great.
Definitely. Get us that so that we can start talking about it. And I'm going to keep, now I got a visual. That is so cool.
Yeah, I just gave Carol a picture. So
oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. And I have Thursdays and Fridays off, so I think I might be going up there next week.
Go up and take a dip with
you. I think so, Daryl and I.
Teams, huh?
So much fun.
Oh, my gosh. That is so cool.
I'm thinking maybe you could do the show from the raft.
Now she's off. It's kind of a little personal time. So, but you can always phone in.
I could phone in.
I could definitely phone in. So that would be great. We can probably plan on that.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll talk to Daryl. And
let me know.
Wow. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So anything else happening? We have like probably a minute left of the show. Upstairs,
a minute left. Oh, my gosh.
With all your little wands up there.
And I saw Holly Saturday night at the Miss Rockingham County and Miss Greater Plastow as she gets ready to go to Atlantic City and represent not only the state of New Hampshire, but in a way, Make-A-Wish.
Make-A-Wish.
Yeah, what a wonderful
spokesperson.
It's been a
wonderful partnership. Yeah,
it really has. Met her parents.
She's been in every school across the state this year, so from Make-A-Wish.
So terrific. Yeah. Well, that's very important news, and we'll talk again next week on Tuesday when you're here and get everybody all ramped up, and we'll arrange to have some on-air call-ins.
Okay, that sounds great. Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. Food for thought. We're done for the day. And up next is Kale and Company, and he is here in the house at the Beacon Building. So stay tuned, and we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Yes.